Chapter 11. Prairie. The next day felt like the longest day in either of the boys' lives. Last night the nice, flat grassland had looked so inviting after a day of climbing up and down steep hills and ravines. Today the trio would have given anything to be back in the mountainous forest. Bernice woke them up well before dawn because she wanted to get across the river at the other side of the grasslands before nightfall. She ate some carrots and broccoli and walked down to the spring while the boys sat on the hilltop waiting for the sunrise.
"Huh, that's odd," Stavius suddenly remarked.
"What's odd?" asked Janice as he followed Stavius's gaze eastward towards the brightening sky. "I had pretty much convinced myself that Mirth and Earth are different realities but in the same place, but now I'm not so sure." He continued after seeing Janice's puzzled expression. "I know that Mirth has magic and different plants and animals. I know that the moon, Venus, and Mars have oceans, forests, and, I suppose, animals. I guess I was hoping that everything else was the same other than that." Janice laughed. "Yeah, those are pretty minor differences after all."
"No, you know what I mean," complained Stavius. "The gravity of Mirth feels about the same. The sun is the right size and color. The moon and planets seem to be in the same places. Physically,
Earth and Mirth could be the same, except for that whole atmosphere and oceans thing on the moon."
"And your point is?" asked Janice, who was starting to get bored.
"Well, I was looking at the constellations and realizing that they aren't quite right," continued Stavius. "Mark is no expert because he can't see much with all the light and smog where he lives on Earth, but he does recognize Cassiopeia, the Big Dipper, and Orion."
"And?" repeated Janice.
"And while the Big Dipper and Cassiopeia look similar, something is wrong with Orion. Mark can only see the shoulders, hips, belt, and sword at home, and they look the same, but the rest looks all wrong. You see, he remembers how Orion is supposed to appear from star charts because it is the only constellation he thinks looks at all like its namesake.
Orion should have a bright star for a head and an arc of stars for a bow."
Janice looked up at the sky, and in an odd twist, the sheer multitude of stars made it difficult to identify most constellations. Finding Orion was easy, though. It was rising just above the eastern horizon. Janice thought that Orion's body, belt, and sword looked fine, but Stavius pointed out that the star buried between his shoulders should have been his head, and that his bow looked like it had been run over by a wagon. Either the textbooks on Earth had fudged the positions to make the constellation look more like Orion, or the stars here were in slightly different places.
"So what?" asked Janice. "What makes you think that the only differences between parallel universes would involve our planets? Do you believe that Earth and Mirth are at the center of the universe? Perhaps you still think that the sun revolves around us, too."
"You're right, Janice," sighed Stavius. "It was stupid, but somehow I felt closer to home when I thought that the only things that had changed were here and that the rest of the universe was the same. But it makes complete sense that this," as he swept his arms across the grasslands, "is just one of many differences between our two realities."
"Boys, the sun is almost up, and we'd better get going before it gets too hot," boomed Bernice's voice from down the hill. The boys rose to their feet and followed her into the veld.
It is hard to convey what it was like to travel through those grasslands. The grasses rose 7 or more feet tall and were far too dense to see beyond a few feet on either side of the narrow trail they were following. There was a narrow strip of blue sky and searing sun overhead, a brownish-greenish blur to their left and right, and a thin, endless path forward and back. You would think that it would be silent, but the noise of millions of grasshoppers and trillions of long blades of grass rubbing together in the steady winds blowing across the plain was deafening. The first hour of unchanging views felt like a day. The second felt like a week, and when they saw a widening of the path up ahead at midday, they almost cheered. Their joy turned to horror when they reached the clearing, however. The grasses had been trampled in an area about 50 feet wide, and everything was covered in blood and flies. This was probably where the growling and screams came from last night, and it made them realize that they were traveling along a significant game trail weaving through the grassland. The fellowship hurried onward for another quarter mile before pausing for a drink of water. No one suggested that the group extend their respite into a meal, and they moved on after a quick sip.
Their minds filled the dark, unseen spaces in the grasses on either side of the trail with every predator imaginable. All three were eager to be out of the prairie.
As scared as Stavius felt, he knew that Janice was far more terrified. He began talking to Janice about magic and anything else he could think of to keep their minds off of what was lurking behind the grass curtains surrounding them. Eventually, he asked something he had been wondering for a while. "So, Janice, how powerful of a magician were you before you merged?"
"Just as strong as I am today," Janice replied.
"But if merging didn't enhance your powers, what did it do?" asked Stavius.
"Well, to be honest, it hasn't done anything," admitted Janice. "You see, my visitor and I haven't merged."
"What?" exclaimed Stavius.
"Keep it down, you clowns," hissed Bernice over her shoulder. "Are you trying to get us eaten?"
"Sorry," mumbled Stavius.
"But Janice, why not? We need all the help we can get, and who knows what you'll be able to do once you're merged."
"Hey, don't tell me. Tell my visitor," grumbled Janice. "I've shared every secret and opened myself up to the guy, but he won't let go. He's pretty quiet to begin with, and there is some sort of secret that he either can't or won't share with me. It makes no sense, but there's no convincing him to open up, so we're stuck here together, but separate."
Bernice pointed at a tree's silhouette in the gap between the grasses in front of them, and their conversation quickly ended.
The trio ran toward it and felt the ground begin to rise beneath their feet.
Within 10 minutes, they were standing in a copse of trees on the top of a small hill.
The grassland laid behind them, and a series of lightly forested hills rose in front. They paused for a quick meal, which turned into a 2-hour break as they realized how their hunger, exhaustion, and pent-up anxiety had drained them. Bernice finally insisted that they press forward to get to the magical spring she had in mind before dusk. 20 minutes later, they were staring across a river, cutting a broad swath through the land. Neither Stavius nor Janice could imagine how they would be able to climb down the cliff to the river, much less cross it, but Bernice was unfazed. She led them down a well-worn trail to the west, which turned into a switchback and brought them to the valley floor alongside the river. She then led them below the rim where they had stood earlier until they reached a broad, shallow set of rapids in the river. The water was fast-moving but shallow enough for a muscular centaur to cross. The boys clambered onto Bernice's back and she cautiously entered the river. The rocks were round and slippery, and Bernice almost lost her footing several times. She even had to backtrack once when the water became too deep. Centaurs, like cows, do not like to walk backward, and it took all of Stavius's and Janice's persuasion and gentle coaxing to get her back into the shallow water and onto another course. They collapsed in exhaustion when they finally reached the other side an hour before dusk. That exhaustion and the relief from the long day's stressful journey finally being over were probably the reasons why Bernice made her crucial mistake. Whatever the cause, though, disaster struck less than an hour later.
The weary trio walked south along the river until the ravine eased into a gentler slope.
The incline of the trail was still steep, and it took most of the next hour to climb out of the river valley. The three travelers were exhausted, hungry, and nearly out of magical energy by the time they reached the gently rolling hills at the top of their climb. Fortunately, the magic spring Bernice had been daydreaming about was nearby, and she led them straight to it. The boys were learning that magic springs formed in all sorts of shapes and sizes. The one around Septumculus was roughly circular and 10 or 12 miles across.
The one surrounding their training camp was only a 1/4 mile in diameter.
And the secret one surrounded by poison ivy was pear-shaped and only 25 feet at its widest point. These springs also had what Stavius termed flow and depth. They didn't have any real depth like a pool of water, but it felt similar because some contained a sizable reservoir of magical energy, while others only contained the tiniest quantities, which dissipated like an evaporating puddle when touched. Stavius's term for the flow was highly accurate, though. Some magical pools refill with energy as soon as they deplete, while others require hours or days to refill.
Bernice led them to a kidney-shaped magical pool, which was 30 feet long on one axis and only about 10 feet wide on the other.
The shape could be discerned by the presence of small, glowing sprites along its rim, which stood out against the dull, non-magical surroundings. The pool was deep with magical energy, but had very little flow, so that a single, large, thirsty magical creature would nearly deplete it for days. A full and unoccupied pool at dusk, which is the most popular time of day at watering holes, should have signaled danger, but Bernice was so starved for magical energy that she didn't pay any attention, and the boys didn't realize the risk. Bernice plunged into the center and closed her eyes as she absorbed the life essence. Stavius and Janice stood at the edge with their feet in the pool, relishing in the relaxing energy. It is difficult to describe the sensation of absorbing magical energy when you are that depleted, but it is similar to drinking a large, cold glass of water on a hot summer afternoon. It doesn't just feel like it is going into your stomach. Your body seems to sense the cold liquid flowing through your veins as it spreads throughout your body. The sensation was so sudden, tranquil, and refreshing that all three of them felt utterly disconnected from the outside world for a few seconds, which was when the predators attacked. Three large, powerful, and hairy creatures with fierce fangs and claws leaped onto Bernice's back, and she let out a blood-curdling scream. Two more were preparing to attack when they spotted Stavius and Janice. They changed targets and crept toward the boys. Stavius had never seen creatures like these, but he knew what they were. These were the terrifying monsters who lived in ghost stories and in every child's worst nightmares. These were werewolves. Werewolves in Mirth are half-human and half-wolf, but they are not like the legends on Earth. They don't transform from men to wolves, and their bites won't turn someone into a werewolf.
Their bites, claws, and massive bodies maim and kill.
Mirth werewolves have the legs, tail, back, and head of wolves, and the torso, chest, and arms of a human. They are shrewd, powerful predators who hunt in packs and are at the top of the food chain in the wild country. Few people or animals who meet them live to describe the encounter, and this pack had been lying in wait for some prime victims to arrive for dusk feeding at the watering hole. Two werewolves simultaneously leaped at Stavius, who drew his sword and slashed a large gash across one of their thighs. Their attack was a rare case of miscommunication between highly social pack hunters, and they collided with each other as they leaped. The two creatures tumbled past Stavius as the injured one howled in pain.
Stavius stole a glance toward Bernice and saw the big centaur deliver a massive punch to one of her attackers and throw another 20 feet through the air.
She was bleeding profusely, though, and the third werewolf was clinging to her back, preparing to clamp its powerful jaws onto her neck. Bernice wasn't going to live long, now that the werewolves who had attacked Stavius silently agreed on a more effective strategy.
Stavius was still standing in the pool. Almost without thinking, he thrust the tip of his sword deep into the ground inside the pool using both hands.
He closed his eyes and concentrated with all his abilities as the blade pierced the magical field. Five arcs of plasma energy sprang from his hands as they wrapped around the hilt of the sword. Five blue bolts of lightning struck each member of the pack of werewolves. Five of Mirth's most terrifying creatures shrieked in pain as their fur erupted in fire. Five flaming animals ran off in different directions, howling into the twilight. One young man, nearly depleted of magical energy, collapsed onto the ground above a now-empty magic spring. Janice ran to Stavius and caught him as he fell to the ground. "Are you all right, man?" he asked as he guided his friend to a seat on the ground. "Yeah," Stavius hoarsely replied. He managed to chuckle when he saw a werewolf running away on his hind legs, slapping his flaming butt with his front paws.
However, the fact that the werewolves' blazing tails were setting the forest on fire as they ran was not nearly so funny.
"How's Bernice?" he asked.
Janice checked on the centaur and said that she didn't look well.
He drew from his own limited magical reserves and managed to staunch her bleeding, but she was not going to live long. Stavius joined him at Bernice's side and insisted that Janice had to find a way to save her.
"I can't do it, man," said Janice. "I'm good, but there is too much damage. I don't have the skills, and I don't have the energy."
Stavius reached in the backpacks and pulled out the two dragon stones. "Here's your energy, Janice," he sternly said. "Now fix Bernice."
"We'll never be able to carry enough food and water to survive if those packs rescale," Janice cried. "And besides, you don't get it. I don't have the magical skills to do this kind of surgery."
"Janice, we're going to die out here anyway, since Bernice is the only one of us who knows how to get to Septumculus and where to find springs along the way. We'll never even survive until morning without her," said Stavius.
"Then what's the point?" cried Janice.
"The point is that maybe she can make it."
"Just because we don't stand a chance doesn't mean that she shouldn't get one. If you can heal her, perhaps at least she'll get out of here alive. It's the only decent thing we can do, and we have nothing to lose," lamented Stavius.
Janice looked at Stavius and realized he was probably right. The packaged and scaled meals were already growing and starting to ooze out of the backpacks, and he didn't think he could walk another 100 feet, much less hike for several days. "You're right, Stavius," he said, "but it doesn't matter. I don't have the ability. I can't save Hermes, even though I'd like to."
"You have to merge, Janus," answered Stavius. "It's the only way."
"My visitor wouldn't merge before. What makes you think he'll merge now?" yelled Janus in frustration. It seemed as though Stavius wasn't paying attention.
"Because I know who your visitor is on Earth," answered Stavius, "and I know your visitor cares about animals and loves horses. First, Bernice is partially cow, not partially horse. Second,
how do you know who my visitor is?" asked Janus.
"I'll tell you how I know your visitor when we get out of this," said Stavius,
"but you need to merge now. Your visitor knows that it doesn't matter whether Bernice is bovine or equine. She can't be allowed to die.
Share your stupid secret and merge so you can save her, and do it quickly because Bernice doesn't have long to live."
Janus proceeded to pace around in circles, banging his hands against his head and muttering to himself. He finally sat down and stared off into space. Stavius thought the boy had given up and was sitting there crying when Janus let loose a blood-curdling scream. He jumped up, stared into Stavius's eyes, and yelled,
"Oh man! Oh man! Oh man! Now I understand!"
Stavius slapped him hard across the face and said, "That's great, because it must mean that you finally merged, but I don't care. Go fix Bernice." Janus grabbed the two dragon stones and knelt beside Bernice. Stavius didn't know what the boy was doing and had never seen anything like it. Bernice's torso was writhing and moving unnaturally and sickeningly. It looked as though her organs were shifting around inside her and about to pop out of her body.
The space between Janus and Bernice shimmered, and a smoky smell began to waft through the air as though something was burning.
Janus was holding his hands over her body, and they seemed to be fading in and out of existence as he worked.
"I've done all I can, but I don't think she has enough energy to make it," he whispered.
Stavius hung his head in defeat and looked up to see the orange flames of fire in several directions. He realized that the flaming werewolves had set the forest on fire and sighed a resigned laugh. He limped over to Bernice, put his hands on the centaur's shoulders, and began willing his energy over to her. Stavius felt a strong surge as Bernice forcefully drew it out of him. His last thought before passing out was a silent prayer that she would survive and escape.